Sofa I had ever seen before. Well, not longer, but deeper than any sofa any of us really had ever seen before. It was a special kind of blue, three different coloured threads especially chosen and woven together to make the perfect blue. A child's blue, pulled out again after years in the attic, a child's forgotten blue with a thread of time's dust woven into it. I wrote to you that I had found a seed pushed in between the cushions of the sofa after you'd left, that it must have dropped out of your trouser pocket at some stage when we were talking and drinking tea. I told you I had planted it and couldn't wait to see what would become of it. The answer you sent back was as if you'd finally discovered me, caught me in the act of being somebody you had already made a space for in your heart. You shouted, "I knew it!" But as far as airborne words are concerned, you had already started using them years ago. Back then, you'd seen me sitting by the fireplace at a friend's house, seated in my usual position of people watching. Watching people was what I would spend most of my evening doing at any kind of social gathering. Watching intensely and stubbornly, slightly embarrassed that I still hadn't understood the rules of this game I had so often witnessed, confused at my own inability to comprehend the point of the sport I was obviously, at least in body, part of somehow. You came over and crouched down, knees and bent toes resting on the floor beside my armchair. "You look like a bird of prey," was the first thing you said to me that day. "I don't know which kind, but it is a raptor." I didn't find those words interesting in any way. I didn't trust them. I told you to tell me a story instead of trying to flatter me. I was a bit tired of the enormously long and invisible suffixes written in lemon juice that so often appear later when strangers' sentences are held up to the sunlight. I didn't see you for quite a while after that. Well, I met you on occasion, but didn't talk to you and didn't see you more than I see anything big so close without taking a step away from it first. Children have understood so clearly that we cease to exist when we close our eyes. As grown-ups, we only understand when we see in the rearview mirror. I was born without eyelids, so sooner or later I had to let you in. I couldn't keep on turning my face away. But you had known that we existed before I had seen. Thank God for that. There wouldn't have been any time at all for us otherwise. Of course, I don't accept time, like most people anymore. I can't. To live in some kind of social society, we have to accept the clock, aging, the rising and setting of the sun and changing seasons, but we don't have to accept the value of time on the scale of a clock. I don't. I never have. Thank God for that too, my love. Clocks spat on us. Then I met you at a party again at the same house, at the house of the same beautiful woman, a friend who lives in a labyrinth. Honouring the masquerade theme, you looked like a Cossack in a huge white sheepskin hat, perhaps bought on the road to Naivasha. And you had in turn honoured the Cossacks with your vodka consumption, red label Smirnoff, certainly not blue. I spent most of my time leaning against a Maasai spear with a drink in my other hand, enjoying the evening as it floated past my friends and me. I caught a glimpse of you out of the corner of my eye, hovering closer as the night went by, until you caught me standing on my own. You said, "You're always there, somewhere at the back of my mind. I met you the first time many years ago. I remember what you wore." Then we met several times again, but we never had the chance to talk properly. Still, you're there in my mind. "Yeah, yeah," I said, laughingly putting one hand on your shoulder. A cloud of sulkiness passed over your face. "Why don't you come and tell me if we chance to meet in the Dukas, in the shops, on a Monday morning?" You sat down, trying to look more sober, and we talked of books and paintings, the sea and the bush.